Jack's Chamber wants to keep the employment door open for people with criminal records. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Jessica Palumbo, in for Melissa Ross. We're always live here at 9, and make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. You can also catch up on all of our shows at wjctnews.org or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, more than 50 local businesses have signed on to the Jack's Chamber's Project Open Door. That's a voluntary pledge to ban the box asking about criminal history on job applications. What are your thoughts on the pledge? Join our conversation now at 549-2937, or you can comment on the First Coast Connect Facebook page or email us at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Then later, Jekyll Island is being transformed into a holly jolly winter wonderland. Plus, former Jacksonville Suns owner Peter Bragan Jr. wants to build a baseball museum. All of that's ahead. But first this hour, the Jack's Chamber is spearheading an effort to get employers to give people with arrest records a chance. What are your thoughts? Are you an employer? Someone looking for a job? Call us now, 549-2937. Joining us now in studio to get the conversation going is Darnell Smith, Jack's Chamber Chair-Elect and North Florida Market President at Florida Blue. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also joining us is Kevin Gay, President and CEO of the Jacksonville nonprofit Operation New Hope, which helps ex-offenders reintegrate into society. Welcome, Kevin.
Good morning, Jessica.
Darnell Smith, I want to start with you. What is Project Open Door? How does it work?
Well, it is an opportunity for employers to remove the question about a person's record from the application. It allows them to wait until the interview process before getting a chance to receive that information. Now, the great thing about that is that the employers will have an opportunity to be able to identify whether or not a person is the best qualified for the role. And if they are the best qualified, once they get to the interview process, that's when you begin to have the additional questions, and you'll identify if indeed there is a situation that might allow them to, if the person has a record, be able to identify whether or not there's a means or a reason to be able to go forward. And that's what we believe is really, really powerful in this particular process, because there are a number of individuals who may have made or had an offense many, many years ago, and yet they seem to continue to pay for that offense. They seem never to be forgiven for that. And we believe this will give them the opportunity to be considered for livable wages and certainly great opportunities in our community.
And what is in it for employers? What do you tell them?
Well, the great thing is that they have the opportunity to get the most qualified person for the job. That is the greatest outcome there, because otherwise individuals are, in many respects, disqualifying themselves, or if they do check the box, your process may eliminate them from going forward to get in front of the right person to be able to be considered for the job. That's the greatest opportunity for the employers in that regard.
Okay. Kevin Gay, your organization, Operation New Hope, runs the Ready for Work program, which helps ex-offenders find work. So can you tell us about a time when somebody you know had trouble getting a job because of criminal history?
Oh, gosh, Jessica. You know, this issue is an issue that has been a thorn in America now for a long time. I mean, there's 70 million adults now that in our country that have an arrest or a conviction who are typically turned away from that job opportunity. And locally, you know, the numbers are staggering here. I was telling Darnell before our meeting this morning, you know, there's so many stories that we have. A lady that I've gotten to know really well who, you know, when she was 17, she had a prostitution charge. She's 63 now, has been working in our community, is an advocate on behalf of people with alcohol and drug issues, just been an incredible stakeholder. She thought she was going to have an opportunity for a really good job at, you know, at a prison, at Baker Prison. Went and interviewed and felt everybody fell in love with her like everybody normally does when they meet her, because she's a dynamic woman. She was working at a local nonprofit in Jacksonville at the time, but she wanted to make more money, you know. Mm-hmm. And so she went and interviewed, and they loved her. They made her an offer. And she's all excited, came back and tendered her resignation at the nonprofit that I was on the board of. Mm. And about 2 weeks later, she comes back to me, though, in my office, and she's in tears. And she says, you know, hey, I hate to tell you this, but I guess now I don't have any job because they withdrew the offer. What happened is it had gone up to the top of the prison, I think the warden, and they saw that she had an arrest when she was 17. Now, that was 40-something years ago. Mm. When I talked to her, she wasn't upset because she was thinking she didn't have a job now. She looked at me and when she said, America is never going to forgive me. I had a charge 17 years ago as a young girl, and I've worked my entire adult life now doing really good things. And I think that is so emblematic of what's happening in our country. You know, there's so many people with really good skills who don't feel they have the opportunity, the openness to go in and make their case, or a lot of companies just truly don't hire. And so it's important.
And do you see Project Open Door as making a difference?
Oh, my gosh. Let me first say that I couldn't be more proud of this city. We were the first city to ban the box back in 2008 with Councilman Kevin Hyde writing legislation. Mm. And I've been in this now for 17 years, and it's been a difficult path in most cities. But our city, with great leadership, did that in 2008. We didn't even call it ban the box because we didn't know there wasn't such thing. But our city became. But what Daniel Davis in the chamber and Darnell and Audrey Moran and former Sheriff Nat Glover, president of the college, and especially with Darnell's leadership here at Blue, it is a game changer, and I don't think the city even quite understands how big of an issue it is. It really sends up a flag of hope to so many people when they see big companies like Blue and Baptist and others standing on the steps of the chamber going, guess what, folks? We're going to give you an opportunity.
Right.
This is huge. And what's huge is no other chamber in America is doing this. So our city is so far ahead in this issue, and I think the byproduct of that is going to be an incredible amount of hope in our communities across the city.
So you're saying the city itself banned the box in its own hiring practices.
And that's through the government, though. That's what
right.
Everybody needs to understand. When you talk about ban the box, typically, you know, it's a government mandate with regards to the agencies of the government mm-hmm. that say, look, we want anybody that's applying for a job with the government, unless it poses some type of a security risk in some capacity, we need to give people that opportunity, which I think is great. What Daniel and Darnell and the folks at the chamber did, I thought was great. They wanted it to be a government mandated, wanted it to be a buy-in from the companies themselves by understanding and taking the initiative. Darnell and these guys have been working really, really hard. Darnell will never do that, but tell you this, but they have been working incredibly hard over the past year, year and a half to explain it properly to the employers, because a lot of people, as Darnell knows, we sat in his office with his team, you know, a year ago. A lot of people don't understand what ban the box means or what mm-hmm. this, you know, it's not saying that you'll never have the chance. It's like, as Darnell said, let's give people that chance.
549-2937, that is the number to call to join our conversation. We have a caller on the line now in Mandarin. Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning, you're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
What is your...
This is a crucial topic. I'm 45 years old, and I have a felony charge from when I was in my mid-20s, and it's the only blemish on my record, but this employment situation is very real. I basically stopped looking for work 10 years ago because every time I would go in, I would basically be rejected. I'm self-employed, which is actually a very difficult thing to maintain. But the amount of discouragement that I feel, and others like me, I know several people in the same position, is extreme. We actually feel like we've been flushed down the toilet and cast away by society. And what it amounts to is lifetime character assassination that is sponsored by the government. And in our rapidly evolving digital environment, it's becoming spooky for people of any type of record. And I really, once again, thank you for this show this morning. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. Darnell Smith, what do you think when you hear that? 10 years stopped looking for work.
Oh, wow. I think it really indicates how important this work is. Just think about it. This is a great city. I love this city. I had a chance to, you know, grow my family here and to raise my children with my beautiful wife. And I would tell you, this is a great city, but we can never, ever reach our potential if we're not thinking about everybody having hope, having a chance, to be a part of the Jacksonville dream. And so we really have a lot to offer in this city. And we're working really hard at the Chamber to make certain that our economy is strong. We do that by bringing jobs here and by growing jobs. But we know that the talent we have here, the people in this city, that is our competitive advantage to the world. We have great natural assets, and those assets help us to sell quality of life to the world, but it's our talent that's here, and everybody must have a chance to be able to be a part of it, and that's where our people, our residents, must be given a chance, and that's what that gentleman was asking for.
Now going to our Facebook page, we have a comment from Nick. He says, I love this idea. Now they need to stop credit checks as well. So many people were hurt during the last collapse. Their scores fell, and some people can't get hired just for that. But this is a great program indeed. Kevin Gay, what do you think about that?
Well, I'd like to go back for a second on the gentleman that was calling before, because I think he brought up something that I think is really important. And it's unique for our country only, really. What this guy was saying was, I serve my time. You know, I think the worst thing that can happen to a human being is to lose your freedom. And I think it's important, if you do wrong, you need to spend the time and do that. But in our country, though, we have two sentences, really. You have the sentence with jail or sentence with the Department of Corrections. And then you have the second sentence. What he was talking about is a lifetime sentence in America where we don't forget. You know, he said he could hear in his voice, I've been working so hard. It was, you know, number of 20-something years ago, and he's still struggling today. And I think that's what, and that's why this initiative is so important, is that he said the word give up. And I gave up on looking for a job, you know. And so most people don't have the wherewithal to have the resources to start a company. And so I think what happens for those folks when they give up is what we see happen in the newspaper, is, you know, the crimes. There is so much rich data that talks about the impact that a job has. It talks about for every 1% drop in the unemployment rate, it has probably a 2 or 3% drop in our crime index. And so Darnell and I were talking beforehand, and I love, you know, working with somebody like Darnell in the chamber, because let's talk about it in practical terms. What does all this mean? And the return on investment in our community, public safety, and all of those things are so intertwined, but hope is such an important part of that.
Now we have several calls on the line. Going now to Memori on the north side. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Wonderful. Yes, I'm okay. I'm calling because I'm a small-time employer. I do employ home health aides and nursing aides and nurses.
Yes.
And every day when I'm in, you know, just like the other gentleman was saying, I feel so bad that there are competent people, qualified people who come to my office for employment, and I can't employ them. You know, it's like they are being in prison for the rest of their life. They can't get a job because of some minor crime they have committed for 20, 30 years ago. And this is very serious. We can't sentence somebody for the rest of their life after serving their time. And that's what's painful to me as a small employer. And I know these people are competent. They can do the job.
So, Memori, would you be interested in banning the box or joining Project Open Door?
I definitely would be interested to, you know, put a stop on it completely. That people, if they serve their time and they have become good citizens in society, they should be able to get a job. That's my thing.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call.
Yeah.
All right. And now going to Zara in St. Augustine. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say I work in a drug rehab, and I see this all the time. People that, you know, I had a bank robber who served 20 years in prison, and when he got out of prison, he couldn't get a job anywhere because he had this felony record. And he said, you know, I've been trained in prison to do, you know, I can make eyeglasses, I can do so many things, but because of this felony, it's like they want me to be a bank robber because I can't do anything else. They won't let me, you know, work doing anything else because I have this record. And so he's homeless and he drinks because what else can he do? He can't, you know, he can't get in anywhere. Hopefully, you know, we turned his life around with at the drug detox. But I totally agree. I think this is a great project. and how do I sign up?
All right. Well, thank you very much, Sarah. Darnell Smith.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I'm just absolutely enthused to hear how many people really support this. And just to echo what they're saying, the number one factor in whether a person returns to jail or prison is whether or not they have a full-time job. When a person has a job and the means to provide for himself or herself, the chances of reoffending are significantly reduced. Mm-hmm. And that's really important to understand. And I think I'm hearing from our colleagues and certainly our employers on the First Coast that they are willing to certainly step up. And so as I think about the work that we have in front of us, certainly between the Chamber, the Civic Council, and many others who are on board with this, in 2017, we're looking for the opportunity to bring on many, many other employers. The metric that we really have to look at, getting the chance to open the door is really important. Getting employers to join in the process, really important. What we want is the employment for the offenders. This is how we're going to measure whether or not we are successful through this process. Mm-hmm. When individuals can say, when I work and live in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm treated as though I am a part of the community. And because of who I am, because of what I do, not because of what I might have done many, many years ago, I am able to have livable wages for my family. That's what we're looking for.
Now, I want to pretend for a minute that I'm a business owner in Jacksonville, and you're coming to me with this idea. And I say to you, but I have the right to know if somebody has a criminal history before I hire them. Why should I sign this? What do you say to them?
I think they should have that, and I think they will have that. This is not asking them to not look at the criminal history. This is simply saying, remove it, remove the question from the application, look at the person for his or her qualifications. If they are the best qualified to the point where they get to your interview process, then have the question. Mm-hmm. Have the conversation about that question. And allow that, whatever they may share, and certainly that would typically, most employers would go and do their due diligence to look at the criminal records and all those things, make the best choice for your organization and for your company. We don't want them to give up any of those rights. Mm-hmm. We simply want to be able to have the conversation so they can make the choice that's best for themselves and their particular employer, but hopefully as well for the applicant.
So many more calls on the line. We now go to Richard downtown. Good morning, Richard. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Darnell and Kevin, I appreciate the work that you guys are doing and have been doing in the community for years. One of the other callers, you mentioned, Kevin, I think the young lady, the woman who had 17, you know, had a record, and 40 years later it came back to haunt her. And one word she said, she felt like she would never be forgiven. I always start this conversation with prison back to the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment says neither slavery or involuntary servitude shall exist in this country. And then there's this big gaping exception. It says except as punishment for a crime. I believe that our problems would be solved if we just remove that exception to the rule and say everyone is free until you give up that freedom. And when you give up that freedom, you go to jail. But when you go to jail and pay your debt to society, you come back to a free society, nothing over you. And I guarantee you, recidivism would probably be cut by 90% because freedom becomes such a valuable asset in the community that who would want to give up freedom again and again and again? My question is, what are we doing to change the legislation that allows the prison system to be this revolving door to make money off of people are being employed in prison at a dollar a day, and corporations are making billions? Is there an effort to address that part of the system, or is this a totally standalone effort for right now?
Thank you for that question, Richard. Kevin Gay.
Well, I'm pleased to say, Richard, yeah, in doing this for 17 years, learning about these issues is something that's just really captured my heart and soul in a way that I never thought in a million years it would. I wake up in the middle of the night, you know, about these issues because, you know, they've touched my heart. But I'm also excited. What's happening in Jacksonville is not just unique in our state. We have a number of legislators. We have Senator Bradley from Clay County, who and Travis Cummings, and a number of representatives here who are really taking a lead role in taking a look at all of this around the criminal justice system, and reviewing minimum mandatory sentencing guidelines. And so I think, Richard, there's movement. Darnell and I were talking before the show about the metrics. What's going to change the, unfortunately or fortunately, what's going to change this scenario and change the narrative in America is being able to measure the impact of what this is having. We know what is, I mean, because we're already seeing this enough around the country now, but enough data is really going to be able to change the storyline. That's why I'm so excited about what's happening in Jacksonville. Our city is at the forefront of driving a new conversation in America about what second chances mean. And second chances do matter. And I think we're going to see, you're right, Richard, that once a person's paid their dues, they need and deserve the right to a job.
Darnell Smith?
Sure. And Kevin is absolutely correct. And I really appreciate the question from the gentleman. I think on top of that, to add to what Kevin was saying, the beauty of this is that the business community is saying, we're not waiting for legislation. We're going to take this into our own hands because we know we can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And so in addition to what the gentleman was speaking of, and certainly Kevin answered it very well, we, the business community, are coming forward and making it really clear. We cannot be as great as our potential if we do not take these kind of issues on and make change happen and certainly make do for citizens and residents of Jacksonville.
All right. Chuck out at the beaches. Good morning, Chuck. You're on the air.
Good morning, guys. I want to follow up on Richard's call. I'm a Republican, and I don't like injustice. And when I see injustice, it makes me want to fight. I don't mean literally, but I really appreciate what you guys are doing. And I want to take it a little bit further. The woman who was 17 years old and couldn't get the job after 40 years, I just don't want to ban the box. I want to ban the interview. I think that you were talking about the employer's right to know. This happened 40 years ago. And the other thing that I would like the state legislature, which I have huge doubts that they'll do anything about this, but I'm just assuming that you can go on Google and pull up anybody's record and what they did. And there's probably people that make money doing those kinds of things. So if I was the president and I could do an executive order, I would ban that. I would make it so that once you served your time and after a reasonable amount of time, I mean, 40 years is a long time, that should not be something that an interviewer should be able to do or anybody on Google. And I would personally make it financially, like fines and laws and actually punish people with criminal charges if they went into someone else's business after they had paid their debt. And now there are some crimes like sexual assaults and those kinds of things that, yes, we need to know about. But what that woman did at 17 years old, personally, and this is my own opinion, that's nobody else's business but hers. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Kevin Gay, going even further, should we not have these conversations at all?
Well, I think there's a lot that's been brought up this morning, and I think there's a balancing act there. I left the corporate world 17 years ago, and hiring, you know, is a big part of the company's, you know, DNA, and getting good people in is important. I really like the approach that our chamber is taking, and this taking kind of a well-thought-out approach to buy-in. And I think what's going to happen here is that we're going to build on these steps, and every one of these victories that we're having are going to be victories that we can build upon. I think companies always need to have the opportunity to know who they're hiring. I think the process that the chamber is doing by setting the table, I love the name, Project Open Door, to say that we have an open door policy. Now, let me tell you what I think is going to help is What we've got to do as a community is be more committed to making sure that we've given those who, when those like Darnell and those in leadership roles with great companies are opening that door, we as a community have to make sure that we've done everything we can to prepare them so that when they get there, they can answer the call. Mm-hmm. And that is really, to the gentleman's question, how do you address that issue? How do you talk about it? I do think there, in time, we need to get to a process that once you've gone through the process, and maybe part of the motivation with companies is if you've done a great job at a Blue or these companies over a period of time, that will automatically qualify you to have your records expunged in the civil rights restoration, which is such an important thing in our country, but still a hard thing to get.
I used to cover the Florida legislature for Florida Public Radio, and I remember this idea of banning the box on job applications. It would always be pitched by a Democrat, and it wouldn't go anywhere in the Republican-controlled legislature. So I'm wondering, do you see this issue evolving to become less partisan and more nonpartisan?
Oh, I do. If you think about the last presidential election, regardless of what side of the political tracks you're on, I believe it was a vote for hope and change. There are people who are hurting, who absolutely need help and support, and they're asking for America, certainly those who are in control, who make key decisions to step up and make certain that they're not forgotten. And so I do believe this is very much something that cuts across both party lines and brings people together to make the right decisions for Americans, and in this case, certainly for the folks in Jacksonville. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to work together. It is about people. That's what this is all about. It's about doing the right thing. This is about people. And I think we want to do that based upon the decisions that we're making and certainly our actions.
Kevin Gate, do you see this issue evolving?
Absolutely. We're at a unique place in our history. I don't know of one issue right now in America that's more bipartisan than this issue. And so I think the timing of what the chamber's done here in this move couldn't be at a better time. It's one of those things where we're all looking for that kumbaya moment, and I think these are one of the few moments we have, as Darnell said, people are going to come together.
All right. We have Yolanda on the line in Springfield. Good morning, Yolanda. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jessica, Darnell, and Kevin.
Morning.
I want to say I truly support this. I'm a retired corrections professional with over 25 years' experience. And with that said, I fully support this initiative. You know, there's been the national support under the Second Chance Act, and now that this is, you guys are putting this open door project here in Jacksonville, I think this is it's great at the local level, and I hope that it spearheads other cities to follow suit. But speaking as a corrections professional and seeing the amounts of people that with talent that are forced into the status of no employment, or at least an employment where they can support themselves and or their family, they're forced in a position where they can't get a decent job with benefits and a decent salary, so they have to resort to whatever's necessary. So I think that even I, as a corrections professional, notice this, I see this, and it's a tragic, and we really do have to have an open door, and for their people, for when they have, you know, served their time, we really, really need to, not just legislatively, but in our hearts and in our minds, forgive people and give them a second chance, especially when they take advantage of the project, the program that you offer, Kevin, at Operation New Hope. Once they pass that schedule of programming and they're prepared to say that they've done A, B, C, and D, and they can move forward, and you guys vet them and you can vouch for them. You know, we the citizens, we former corrections and law enforcement professionals, we have to get behind this. And I just wanted to say I support this, and thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you for that comment, Yolanda. Jacksonville Sheriff Mike Williams and former sheriff and president of Edward Waters College, Nat Glover, have come out in support of Project Open Door as well. Why do you think this effort speaks to law enforcement? Darnell Smith.
Well, you know, one of the things I said earlier is that the number one reason why individuals find themselves going back into a life of crime is because they don't have a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our current Sheriff Mike Williams and certainly former Sheriff Annette Glover. These individuals have dedicated their lives to making certain that they keep us safe. They know that the more we can do to be able to ensure that they're not having to deal with the issues of crime, that we should step up and be able to do that. And so we're working closely with these individuals. And so they were there when last Tuesday, when we stood on the steps to make this announcement. Sheriff Williams, as well as former Sheriff Glover, standing hand in hand, working with the business community, making it really clear that you guys are doing the right things. We really appreciate the help and support, and that we will continue to do more.
We now go to Bill on the north side. Bill, thank you for your patience. You are on the air.
Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to expand on an issue brought up earlier. One gentleman mentioned people with bad credit history, and then the other gentleman said, how do we expunge these records from that lady that was from 17 to 60? In the United States, if you file for bankruptcy, which could vastly affect a lot of people, depending upon, you know, what level that was at, all those records are expunged from everything after 10 years. So I don't see why we couldn't at some point, for certain crimes and certain things, get those things to have a time limit so people knew where they stood, they knew how to work towards the goal, and could increase their self-worth and education levels, get prepared for everything, and then after a certain time, all those records would disappear. I think that might be something that could legislatively get done. We do it for other things. And on one last comment, a little tagline for your open door. How about open door, not revolving door?
All right.
I'll take my answer up here.
Thank you, Bill, for the marketing suggestion. Open door, not revolving door. Kevin Gay, can you tell us a little bit about what your program does to prepare people for the workforce?
Sure. You know, for the last really decade, we have really worked hard at developing a system that would allow companies to feel comfortable in making this hire. And so what we've done is we've developed, I think, a really good science around the vetting, kind of looking at the back end and knowing that, as Darnell said, that the employment piece is such an important part of this. We brought about 12 employers together 10 years ago in a focus group and asked that question, would you be willing to hire folks with records? And really what came from it was a really rich conversation of, we're not in the social world like you are. We are in the employment world. We need good people to show up and contribute to our bottom line. So we said, what would it need to look like? If you can find people who are willing to pass a drug test, be on time, go through the interview, know what it is to be a good employee, attitude. And so we've developed a system of vetting that gentleman just talked about, which I think is important for employers who are willing to step out on this initiative to do it in a way that's educated and really make sure that folks who are coming to them have had a chance to have some type of a vetting. And that's really what we do. We have case managers and job coaches. We go into the prisons and the jails and work with folks to really be able to give them the tools they need. A young man, I watch it all the time, goes through that first mock interview, and they get to the part of the question that says, Kevin, tell me about this charge. And they don't know how to answer it. They just say, I had a drug charge 4 years ago, and their head drops. Mm-hmm. But after doing it 3 or 4 times, you know, when they say, hey, you know, I made a mistake 4 years ago. It was a turning point in my life. I've really, really worked hard over the last several years and, you know, been involved in a lot of things. That's what Darnell's talking about. Employers need to have the opportunity to hear that. We've got to make sure we've undergirded folks with those skill sets so that when they get there,
right,
they can answer the call. And that's really what we do.
Okay. We now go to Lori on the west side. Lori, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi there. I just want to add some feedback on the banning the box and the open door. And my suggestion is this, is have your legal counselors look into expanding and strengthening the right to privacy laws. And I think we could find a way within the system to strengthen this so that people can get a job.
All right. Thank
That's
you.
My feedback.
Thank you for that comment, Lori. What do you think of that idea, Kevin?
Well, you know, I'm going to I'm going to leave that to the legal folks to do. You know, I there's a lot of issues there that that need work, and I think, you know, we're taking big steps now, and I couldn't be proud of what our chamber is doing in the city and the work on the city. Yes, there are a lot of issues that are in play, and there actually there's a lot of work behind the scenes now on civil rights restoration, voting rights, and there's a lot of things behind the scenes. A lot of that's going to be built upon our success on initiatives like we're having with Project Open Door.
So far, some 50 Jacksonville businesses have signed the pledge. Darnell Smith, can you tell us about some of them, and how can these job applicants and others in our community find out who the participating businesses are?
Sure. So we would encourage you to go out on our website for the Jacks Chamber. It's My Jacks Chamber, and you can see the employers who have stepped up. Please know that this is the first of the cohort of employers who have stepped up, and know that we will be recruiting as many employers as possible, and so continue to look for other names to come on there as well. Once we find ourselves in 2017, a lot more of these employers being on there, we anticipate having a chance to bring all of these employers together to make certain that we can then perhaps even have a job fair, maybe even have an opportunity to continue to recruit more individuals to be a part of it as well. So that's one place to go, and please look forward to much, much work ahead for us in this particular topic.
All right. It is Project Open Door. It's the Jacksonville Chamber's effort to get businesses to stop asking about criminal histories on the initial job application. About 50 Jacksonville businesses, large and small, have already pledged. My guests this morning are Chamber Chair-elect Darnell Smith and Operation New Hope CEO Kevin Gay. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being here this morning.
Thank you for having
Thank you for having us.
Still ahead, after selling the Jacksonville Suns, what Peter Bragan Jr. is doing now for young baseball players. We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Donald Trump's victory is the second time in 16 years the President of the United States has been elected without winning the popular vote. This has raised questions about the Electoral College, understanding how we elect the president, and whether the system needs to change. Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Let all of us at WJCT take a moment to express our thanks and gratitude to you. Your support of WJCT this year has helped bring the best in news, drama, performance, ideas, and culture to all across the First Coast. And thanks to you, we intend to accomplish even more in the year to come. Our best wishes to you for a wonderful Thanksgiving and holiday season.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. Tune in every Monday night at 11 and discover new music. As one of the most enduring musical genres, blues can give you a shoulder to cry on, a heart to hang on to, and is here to let you know
everything gonna be all right.
Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I said, baby, everything gonna be all right.
Let's say. Welcome back. I'm Jessica Palumbo in for Melissa Ross. You're listening to First Coast Connect here on 89.9. And now a look at some very special holiday programming here at WJCT coming up on both radio and television. Joining me now in studio to talk about all of the holiday fun is WJCT Music Director David Luckin.
Hi, Jessica. Good morning.
Good morning. And also WJCT's Karen Fagans is here.
So glad to be here.
Thank you. So let's start with radio, David. What do we have coming up for the holidays?
Thursday night, Thanksgiving, our annual broadcast of Alice's Restaurant, which we've been doing for probably 10, 12, 13 years now.
What is Alice's Restaurant?
Arlo Guthrie's famous 17-minute opus to life in the 70s. Let's just leave it at that. It's a great film. It's a great radio broadcast. It was a great record in the 70s when it came out.
What time is that?
Let's see, 9 o'clock on Thanksgiving night.
Can I interject some special programming we'll have Thursday at 9 a.m.
Please.
We will be airing Swamp Radio, a Swamp Radio Thanksgiving, and this is a repeat of last year's Swamp Radio program that was at the St. Augustine Amphitheater. Mm-hmm. They're updating the program for this year, and it should be fantastic. They always put on a good show.
And for people who haven't heard of Swamp Radio, what is that?
Well, it is local storytellers, musicians, and artists, and they do a live stage show, and they record the program for air on WJCT, and it really captures the essence of Northeast Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
I can vouch for that. Northeast Florida-centric stories and music sprinkled in there, too. It's a lot of fun. So that's coming up this Thursday morning, Thanksgiving morning, at 9 instead of First Coast Connect. We'll be taking a little bit of a break later in the week. And so also coming up...
On Sunday night, we'll start every Sunday night from now until Christmas doing old-time radio, classic radio shows. This Sunday night, coming up will be A Christmas Carol, produced by Orson Welles, who did the great War of the Worlds, his Mercury Theater. And then we'll mix it up a little, have some Jack Benny and Bing Crosby and classic radio Christmas shows, Burns and Allen, too. Got them all stacked up, already found them all, just ready to put one on every Sunday night at 7.
Every Sunday night at 7, that's some radio theater with a holiday twist.
Exactly, from now until Christmas.
Here on 89.9.
Oh, let me add, including It's a Wonderful Life, the original with Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed. We'll air that too.
And we have some special television programming coming up for viewers of all ages. We're premiering a new program on November 23rd at 9:45 in the morning. It's called Splash and Bubbles, and it has a very Nemo look to it. So I think kids will enjoy that. And on Thanksgiving Day at 8 o'clock, we're premiering Anne of Green Gables. And for those of you missing Downton Abbey, we know there are many, many fans of Downton Abbey out there. We will have a Downton Marathon from the 24th to the 27th on WJCT television.
Downton Marathon. What more can you ask for the holidays? That's coming up again. Karen, when is Downton Marathon?
The 24th through the 27th.
All right, all weekend long here on WJCT Public Television. All right, that is all coming up to get the holidays kicked off. Thank you for being here, David.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
And thank you, Karen. We are going to come right back after a break with Culpepper and your Monday morning sports. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, Zadie Smith. Her new novel, Swing Time, is about the friendship between two biracial girls in England in the 1980s. We'll talk about class, race, talent, and nostalgia.
I think the idea is that you find some way to restate the things you find valuable in the past, if you find them valuable, in a way that people can live with in this contemporary moment.
Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic, to acoustic. We play it all. Indie Endeavor Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
And welcome back. I'm Jessica Palumbo, and for Melissa Ross, this is First Coast Connect. And finally, this hour.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
It's Monday morning, and that means Cole Pepper is here with sports. Instead of beginning with why the Jaguars lost again, though, let's talk about the SEC Eastern Division champions, the Florida Gators.
Please, can we get a little something? I think we all are looking for some positive things. Positive if you're a Gator fan. If you're not a Gator fan, maybe not so positive. But at least there's something, some group who will be listening who will find this to be a positive. Saturday, the Gators went on the road to play in the game that they were going to play at home the week of Hurricane Matthew. You might remember. Instead, LSU got ridiculous and demanded that the game be played in Baton Rouge. Really, it's a ridiculous position to take, all things considered. After the Gators stopped LSU on a fourth and goal from the 1 yard line to clinch the 16-10 win, Gators head coach Jim McElwain said that LSU, quote, got what they deserved. And quite frankly, I agree. The tone deafness that LSU showed in this whole situation was on the all time list. I mean, as Jim McElwain mentioned after, 50-some of his players' families were in the direct path of Hurricane Matthew, and you're saying, well, you got to play this game at our place because you couldn't play it at your place. Now, LSU is in an even worse situation because the next two seasons, this matchup's going to be played in Gainesville. So, again, comeuppance, I think, for LSU. Florida wins the SEC East and will face unbeaten and number one Alabama in the SEC championship game. Nobody will be picking the Gators to win that one, but hey, they're in the SEC championship game yet again. First, though, they have to face Florida State in Tallahassee on Saturday in that great rivalry. And I think for the first time maybe in 4 or 5 years, this is one of those games that people will say either side has a chance to win. And we might hear some of that traditional Florida State trash talk this week.
We just might.
Keep your ears open if you're in the office. You'll have Seminoles and Gators going at it on both sides.
All right.
Jaguars now.
Okay.
Now I'm sorry, but I have to do it. We have to get there. All right. A little bit of backstory here first.
Okay.
Last week after the Jaguars lost to the Texans, Jaguars defensive tackle Sondarik Marks complained that he wasn't getting enough playing time. Fast forward to yesterday when the Jaguars were hanging around in Detroit against the Lions. Jaguars trailed the Lions by 4 when they stopped Detroit on a third down play, setting up a 4th and 2. The Lions left their offense on the field. It was an obvious ploy to try to draw the Jaguars offside. It's one of these things that everybody in the building knew, everybody watching on TV knew, 3-year-olds in cribs near radios listening to the broadcast knew. It was obvious. Everyone knew it except, apparently, Sondarik Marks, who, by the way, has been a terrific player and a leader for the Jaguars. But this is the kind of thing that has happened this year. Sondarik Marks jumped offside, gave Detroit the first down. Lions kick a field goal, wind up winning 26-19. Just another memorably bad moment in a hopefully forgettable season. The Jaguars are now 2-8. They travel to Buffalo to face the Bills on Sunday. And when you start looking at the schedule at this point, the way they're playing, the way that the defense is playing pretty well, all things considered. They gave up an interception return for a touchdown, not the defense's fault. A punt return for a touchdown, not the defense's fault. When you give up basically 13 points as a defense, you should probably win. Everything else, though, kind of falling apart around them. And you're hard-pressed to find a win left on the schedule for the Jaguars here the rest of the year. I'm certain they will. I shouldn't say certain, should I? I feel strongly that they will find a win or two, but there's nothing that jumps out. You say, oh, that's a win. That's a win. That's like it does for good teams.
Right. For good teams.
This is stumbling to the finish line with the wheels coming off.
With a hopefully forgettable season.
Yes, okay. Hopefully forgettable. Hopefully it just becomes one of those blurry things in a couple of years that everybody looks back on and goes, what happened that year?
Weird year.
Speaking of remembering, you may remember the push the city and the Jacksonville Sports Council made to land the CrossFit Games in Jacksonville. Instead, Jacksonville lost out as a finalist to Madison, Wisconsin. But the folks at the CrossFit Games sent a message that said, quote, the CrossFit community and the city of Jacksonville have a strong future together.
What does that mean?
Well, it's mysterious. Serious, isn't it?
Yes.
It means that at some point we may revisit this and the CrossFit Games could come here. This is this is a significant economic impact for whatever city hosts, because you have so many athletes coming in and staying for an extended period of time. People come to watch the CrossFit Games, and it's one of the types of events that the Jacksonville Sports Council always makes a push for, that is a great event for people to attend here in Jacksonville, that puts Jacksonville on a national map from a broadcast standpoint and makes an economic impact as well.
Mm, we'll see.
All right, let's finish up with high school football, shall we? Eight schools left in the high school football playoffs in various classifications, including two that are undefeated, Bowles in 4A and Pontevedra in 5A. For the smaller classifications, this weekend, Friday, is the state semifinals. So a win this weekend, and on Monday, next Monday, we may be talking about some high schools in the area playing for state championships. We'll be keeping a close eye on all those teams around the area trying to represent their schools.
That is some very exciting stuff. Thank you very much, Cole.
Thanks, Jessica.
And that is our show. Thank you to all of our guests and our callers this morning. Our producer is Kevin Murchard, and Michelle Corum runs the board. This show's theme song is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes. Coming up next on The Diane Rehm Show, Donald Trump's victory is the second time in 16 years the President of the United States has been elected without winning the popular vote. That's raised some questions about the Electoral College, understanding how we elect the president and whether that system might need to change. That's coming up next. I'm Jessica Palumbo. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here tomorrow morning at 9. Have a great day, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.